And in a moment on Coast to Coast AM, you're going to hear from Stan and Holly Dale as we talk about Hopi prophecies, sun cycles, the possibility of tsunamis, earth changes. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here's the husband-wife team. Stan Dale, of course, has held top-secret security clearances, worked undercover for the FBI. He was part of a very exclusive black project headed up by Dr. Edward Teller, specializing in the development of flying saucer technology. Stan has lectured on many world events, including the coming global economic collapse, developing solar-related crises in Earth's climate, and also the UFO deception. Holly Dale, of course, graduated from the University of Missouri in Kansas City, a BA in English, understudies in sociology and geology. And though her first love is writing and research, her career was interrupted to run the family business for a number of years. And then she embarked upon preparedness research. She has authored Dare to Prepare with Stan, a 500-page reference book on preparedness. And here they both are back on Coast to Coast, Stan and Holly Dale. Hello, you two. How are you?
Hi, George. It's a pleasure.
You too, Holly. Stan, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Good. So many things going on this planet right now. It's difficult to keep track of what's going on. How do you both do it? I mean, everywhere you look, something's going on.
Well, Holly, how do we do it?
One day at a time. I know that sounds trite, but if you kind of look too far down the road, it gets pretty overwhelming.
Well, it sure does. It sure does. And, you know, let's start by talking about Hopi prophecy, Stan. And exactly what is it? Because it doesn't paint a great picture for us, does it?
No, it doesn't. The Hopi had Holly and I as guests in 96 and in 97 down in northern Arizona. We were privileged to talk with their prophecy people, and they revealed a number of things to us. And one thing which I've mentioned on the show before but have not gone into great detail about was what is about to happen to the United States, according to them. I have up on the website a link. Holly's put it up there so that people can follow us that are on the Internet and look at the picture of the water level inundation that I'm going to talk about, which the Hopi gave to us. They told us about several things as we approach the fifth world, the end of this fourth world and into the fifth world in their prophecies. Now, I know that some of your listeners would probably think that, well, gee, can you trust Hopi prophecy? And my thought is, well, it agrees in many aspects with Christian prophecy, which we follow. Mm-hmm. So I do. And I certainly don't think that any of them that we talked to were trying to mislead us or gain from it financially or any other way. Now, they told us, they took us out on the edge of the second mesa where they live and pointed down to the desert floor a few hundred feet below and said, look, as the changes begin, the great earth changes to end this age, this world, they call it, the fourth world, you will see that water comes between these mesas, and we will go between the mesas by boat and canoe. He said also, around this time, there will be a great civil war in the United States, not between just two factions, but between many factions, religious factions, economic factions, ethnic factions, mm-hmm. All that kind of stuff. Now, one of the things that they said, which I was reminded of earlier this week, or over the weekend, was that the invading forces that would come into the United States while we're having the Civil War would come from China, from Russia, and from the Middle East. I could figure Russia and China. I mean, that's pretty obvious, but I couldn't figure out how the Middle East would mount an attack on the United States until we saw in the press where Iran has developed its cruise missiles to take out our ships, and they're going to put them on their own ships and come outside in international waters outside the east coast of the United States now. And they're taking delivery of something they've been experimenting with, which is an EMP pulse weapon.
That's right.
Now, that's the Middle East missing card that I couldn't understand when the Hopi told us that. And this was back, you know, in 96 and 97. That's a long time ago. So it's kind of self-verifying when you see it in the news now. The other thing on the map that I've got up there, which I show the water inundation that would be required to bring the water between the mesas in northern Arizona. If it were that high from sea level rise, it would sink darn near everything that's, you know, like Denver and everything
else. Oh, sure, to get there. That's a lot of water, Stan.
It is a lot of water. And so I tried to figure out what, you know, what would cause this, you know, and not sink everything. Now, we can have sea level rise of about 215 feet, according to the latest stats from NASA and various other weather groups that have been studying the ice melt. And that would cover areas that I've shown on the map on your website and on our website in the light blue on the eastern states. On the western side of the country, certainly there would be areas covered by that, and I'll show that in a DVD that's coming out later this year. I'll talk to you about that later.
Okay.
But on the western side, I had to show what would be sunken by a 5,280-foot or 1 mile deep water rise, or by a land subsidence, by things falling down into the ocean, as Edgar Cayce and many others have said would happen on our west coast. Now, the graph or the image there shows that those areas would have to drop down. We'd lose most of California. There would be islands left, but very few, as you can see on the image. And there's an arrow I've got pointing up to a yellow circle around the three mesas of the Hopi. It also shows that the Navajo Nation, which is right around the Hopi mesas, most of that would be sunken as well. So I think what's going to happen is we're going to have a catastrophic breakup of the West Coast, and it will subside as our tectonic plate that we're on dives down under the Northern Pacific plate. And that will cause the water level rise, or the water level apparent rise, to the Hopi. They'll actually sink down to the level that the water can rush in between the mesas.
As opposed to the water coming to them, we're basically going to it.
Yeah, and that's the only way I can explain it, with everything else being left up above ground. And I don't know where we get a mile deep of water anyway at this point, even bringing it out of the Moho discontinuity under the oceans and stuff. There's a big volume of water there, but I don't think we're going to see a global flood like Noah's flood and that kind of stuff, which is what it would take to do that. So
what's frightening about this too, Stan, is, you know, we know the maps of Edgar Cayce, people like Lori Toy, your work, Hawley's work, Michael Scallion. There's something going on here. Will this be a gradual collapse, or will it just happen like in a day?
You know, I don't know. I tend to think myself that it will be a series of events separated by weeks and months. People will have time, I think, to adjust and relocate, some people anyway. I don't think it will be quite as bad as the movie 2012 showed, you know, where everything was just suddenly upended and dumped into the ocean.
Right, right.
The sea level rise on the eastern side, where I've got the image up there on the screen, that will be a periodic thing, a slow process, and people will start losing homes and property to flooding from the coastal regions, as they're doing in Australia already and some of the islands in the South Pacific. There's one island, I forget the name of it, a nation down there that's going to totally disappear. It will be underwater and gone very soon, in fact, because it's only a few feet above sea level. If we have something horrific happen, which biblical prophecy does address, like something falling from the sky, an asteroid, a meteor, and striking our oceans, that could generate a tsunami-type wave or an impact wave that would ricochet back and forth wherever it hit for several days. And the initial wave would be like, you know, nearly a mile high. That could also contribute to some of the catastrophe that we would need to sink portions of the West Coast. And in that case, the event would be rather sudden, super sudden. But, you know, I'd only be guessing to say at this point, because there's so many factors involved in trying to figure out how that landmass could drop down like that. I have prepared versions of this map that will be in a DVD that Lynn Marzulli's people are producing to release in, I think it's November this year, where I'm showing the 215-foot intrusion into our coastlines all the way around without this Hopi depth here, and also at 900 feet, which reaches all the way up to the Great Lakes and empties into the Gulf of Mexico. So I'm running these scenarios for people who do put faith in the various people who are warning about this, that this is what the sea level rise maximums would do, even if we had some of the sub-oceanic Moho discontinuity break up and shoot water up into the oceans and add to the oceans. It shows you where it's probably not too wise to be living at that time, which gives people time to move or make adjustments to float to land when it does hit over a period of time.
I mean, this is a drastically altered North America, Stan. I mean, it's unbelievable. There's no Florida under this scenario, is there?
There's not. It's totally submerged, and you know, a big chunk of Louisiana, probably three quarters of it, is underwater. A lot of the eastern coast, where we have huge population centers, is underwater or are underwater. Holly's going to talk about that a bit later. I'll be in there and jump in with her about it when we talk about Cumbre Vieja,
yeah,
because that's going to hit Florida too, and that's a wave that will not just gradually come; that'll sweep it clean. You know, about 8 hours after something happens over in the Canaries.
Does this ever recede, or this is almost like permanent?
Well, that would depend upon whether we go into another ice age and the ice starts to collect at the poles, wherever they are at that time, and to form, you know, glaciers and large deposits of ice over land and take the weight off of the ocean, and then it will start to, you know, and the water as well, it'll start to subside. I think, however, by that time that certainly the United States, which we're probably most concerned with, will be a totally different place and will probably be split into two land masses, but they split going up the Mississippi into the Great Lakes. That's just a guess. I mean, I'm not a prophet, but I can see from the geological studies we've been studying and the evidence of earthquakes and some other things that we can discuss on the New Madrid Fault later, I can see where we are going to possibly split the country in half. Because of the fault line and the dike construction under the surface of the Mississippi, that it could be quite drastic. And I don't think I'm alone in this. I think that the government is aware of this and has been preparing people really heavily for this. On the page that we have there up on the website, I've got some articles there that you can link to. Sorry, what's it called, Holly, on the news page? On the Coast Listeners page, yeah, right. If you go down, it says enter here after Coast Listeners, and you'll get there, and it says Coast to Coast AM with George Neary Talking Points.
Okay.
And if you go down to the second row of pictures on the left, you'll see a picture of the United States with a bunch of little white dots. I guess I might as well just bring that in now, because why would FEMA request information on 140 million food packets and blankets and body bags like they did in January this year? Why would FEMA spend $1 billion on survival in February this year? And why do they have almost 3 million people participating in a first multi-state quake drill in the area? And FEMA's, you know, renewing the community-level discussions on catastrophic disasters and planning for them and mitigating them. Now, this map that you see there with the little white dots is a map showing where they have ground movement sensor stations. And it's rather telling. If you look at
it, it's huge.
Yes, but where are the sensors placed? Southern California and all the way up the middle of the United States, up to the Great Lakes.
It's New Madrid and all the way up.
Now, if you click on that, what will happen is it will take you to an animation that IRIS have produced showing the earthquake that hit in August in Virginia on August the 23rd, and you'll see the quake is a red star, which you can see on the still picture. But this animation shows how the wave moved across the United States, and it was picked up on all the sensors in the New Madrid and even in Southern California after that. It shows you how that wave went through. And so you ask yourself, why are they so concerned with ground motion in the New Madrid area? Why? Because it's an area subject to sudden release of large seismic forces that are building there, have been building for 170 years.
Can New Madrid be triggered by earthquakes someplace else?
I think so. And a lot of it depends on where that someplace else is and how the waves focus on a weak area or an area that is poised to collapse or to move in the New Madrid Plate area. The New Madrid system of fault lines is really quite unique in that they're like looking at a crossword puzzle where the lines, you know, are up and down and sideways. The fault lines are not all straight up and down. It's because this is a remnant of a stretch mark, in essence, like it runs up the middle of the Atlantic Ocean between North America and Europe. And that builds those like dikes, which if you look at the fault lines or the split right up the North Atlantic, you'll see that there are east-west lines across it. And those kind of dikes formed in the Mississippi Valley, but it did not quite separate and continue to spread like the Atlantic did. So that's why we have this unusual formation right up the middle of the United States.
Back around 2000, I think Discovery did a documentary on these possibilities as well, and that was pretty frightening stuff, Stan.
It was, and it still is. And it doesn't take, you know, earthquakes to trigger. They could be nuclear war, or bombs dropped that might trigger it. It could be an asteroid impact.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of things that are quite probable in our future that could help trigger that thing in the New Madrid and the Southern California area. Now, that Southern California cluster of ground motion sensors, if you look in that graph there, that's right where it needs to be to drop down a large section of the landmass and allow the water to flow up in between the mesas. So here is solid proof that the government is interested. They've been collecting data in that area, too, because they're concerned. Now, you know, all I can say is if they're concerned, I'm concerned.
Well, you know, you watch predictors. I mean, you are there. You see these things. And then, you put the data together and come up with your conclusions. And your conclusion on this is that this could be devastating.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. And hopefully, I mean, Holly and I talked about a number of things that are approaching critical mass here at the moment, threatening not only the United States population, but the whole world. And this is kind of why we decided, look, we better get a hold of you and do a show and tell people that aren't paying attention that they better, and to make plans accordingly, you know, with their family situations and whatever. It never hurts. It never hurts to be prepared for disasters like this.
I mean, I'm, for example, in both of them, St. Louis, Southern California. I no matter where I am, I'm going to get it.
Well,
we'll be flying in between the two at the time.
if I'm lucky, but my family's in one spot, so you want to pull them out of it too.
Absolutely.
Let's tie this into Hopi prophecy then, Stan, in terms of events that would occur as you see these unfold. As you mentioned, they talked in terms of stages. What stage are we at now?
I think we're very close to the second, or like the penultimate, or the ultimate stage before things really start to fall apart. They mark their time or their stages by messengers that have come to them. And they had 8 messengers they were told that would come telling them various things about the earth changes. And when the 8th one comes and delivers his message, then you know, everything's supposed to fall apart. And I've asked the Hopi, you know, trying to narrow it down even closer, you know, when. And basically, all they will say is soon. And Holly and I joke about it, which probably is in bad taste, but we say it's Hopi soon because they don't have any more accurate dating than that. And most of these seers and people who forecast these things don't have exact dates either. They have events that surround it, and you look for those events as precursors. I think that the Hopi have received, Holly, what was I number 5 of their 8?
You were 5 of 8.
I was the 5th messenger they received, and that was in 96. So have they had 6, 7, and 8 arrive yet? I don't know. We tried to reach a couple of our sources down there, and we're unsuccessful, but we will pursue that and see.
The chief's wife, I believe it was the wife, was rather surprised yet not when we walked in, and during the conversation it came out that she had dreamed of Stan years ago and knew that he would be the 5th of the 8th expected messenger.
I'd love to find out exactly what numbers we're at. Stay with us, Stan, and Holly Dale with us on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. Well, it's October, and we're starting our campaign for 1,000 new members of the Coast Insiders Club. For just 25 cents, a little less than that a day, you can be one. And also, it makes you eligible to download 1,000 programs, by the way, of the past 3 years' worth, and just swipe like that. So simply go to coasttocoastam.com. You'll see the Coast Insider icon up there on the right-hand corner of the homepage, and you can sign up for it. Coast Insiders on Coast to Coast AM. Stan, talking about water and high levels, we hear FEMA, of course, talking about flood insurance. I wonder what they know that we don't, huh?
Well, you do have to wonder about that. I know that Munich Re, the reinsurance company, has certainly put out an article that they warned people about the increase in the last decade. I think you guys may have talked about it on the show, I'm not sure, earlier this week, where this last decade has been the largest number of billion-dollar disasters in the history of record-keeping. What was it, Holly, about $130 billion or something like that? It seemed like it was. I forget exactly what they said, but you're off closer to 150, you think?
Yeah, she's not on her phone there. Is she? Stan?
Yeah, hold on.
I can't get her.
Yeah. Sure. I don't know what's wrong with her phone. I'll go over and check it while we're talking. But anyway, the insurance companies have been watching us real close because obviously they have a vested interest.
The huge claims right now. Huge. Yeah. Right. Back to Hopi prophecy for a second. Where did they get the prophecy?
Well,
Sam, I'm losing you too. Nope, I cannot hear you.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
Holly, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, she's back on.
All right,
good.
Now
okay,
we can hear her.
We're fixing her phone. I'm sorry, guys.
Okay, all right.
Okay, yeah, the Hopi have had they didn't have the writing to bring the prophecies down, you know, word for word or, you know, accurately, but what they had was pictographs that they obviously has been talked about in a lot of History Channel documentaries, but the pictographs were like reminders or mnemonic-type devices to help them pass the whole message from person to person, you know, orally down through the tradition. Now, when I asked them where, you know, they were getting some of this, or all of it, in that matter, there were two sources. One was from direct contact with the Great White Father who landed in a craft about 1,000 years ago was the most recent time. And the other was from their oral tradition passed forward. Actually, it was a third source, and the third source is when they would certain members of the tribe had the ability to see visions, and like the prophets of Old Testament and stuff like that in the Bible, they had it revealed to them in that manner. Again, I take these things with caution because I do know that within the Hopi nation there are two camps. There are like, you know, pro-Christian type Hopi, and then there's the traditionalists, which kind of revere Kachina dolls and spirit dolls and things like that. So you got to wonder if they were taking dope or something when they got some of this. But what I try to do is to analytically look at what they are saying is coming and compare to other sources that I trust as older, more accurate sources, like, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 year old sources. When those two line up, and when they line up with people like, in some cases, Nostradamus, but certainly Edgar Cayce and others, then I start to see, I understand more about it, and that's where I get my confidence of saying what I'm saying. If you look at the page of the things I was talking about on our site, the show images for tonight, there is a section in there that deals with a prediction I made in 2009, where I said, look, we're approaching a point here in the solar cycle that's going to get a lot worse. In spite of what they're telling you, solar cycle 24 is going to be a real surprise. And Holly's got a link to it there on the things that's where I told solar cycle 24 is going to give us harsh, cold, dry winters, which it did from 2009 to now. We've had harsh, cold, dry winters. And so now the establishment scientists are starting to say, you know, well, we've had some harsh, cold winters, and it does tie to cycle 24. And cycle 24 is turning out to be a surprise. It's accelerating in sunspots and in coronal mass ejections. Not to mention, these are things they couldn't have predicted, or myself, there are comets that are falling into the sun.
One just hit just a day ago.
It did, and did you see the huge, huge coronal coronal mass ejection the other side of the sun as soon as it hit.
And we're going to probably get a piece of that, aren't we?
I think we probably will. I don't think this is going to be like the kill shot across the bow, as Major James might say, but we're going to get something like that to happen. And the scientists are still in the news saying, well, we just can't figure out how that works. You know, a comet falls in, bingo, we have a coronal mass ejection. And Holly and I have been looking at this for 13 or 14 years. We've seen other comets drop in, and sure enough, bang, right after that, a CME had happened on the other side of the sun somewhere. And it's a very delicate electrostatic and electromagnetic balance on the surface of the sun. It's not totally solid like you might think. It's a plasma. And comets are charged. And when they, hit, they disrupt a huge amount of very precariously balanced magnetic and electrostatic fields. And I am not surprised to see these huge coronal mass ejections. The sun has already burned up half of its hydrogen probably 3 or 4 decades ago. The Russians proved that. And once a star does that, it becomes unstable. And it can go through a phase state change eventually, which would lead to its expansion. I don't think we're going to see that right now. But I've often wondered about the biblical prophecy that says in the last days, in the tribulation period, the 7-year period of tribulation, that the sun will go dark like someone had laid a sackcloth of hair across it, like little pinholes of light. And at the same time, the moon would appear to turn to blood because the light level would be of such that it would be a dark red color coming from the moon.
And that could all happen, Stan.
Well, I think it's going to be something a lot of super sunspots all occur, and that cools off the surface temporarily until another new kind of nuclear reaction occurs on the sun, and nuclear chemistry changes, and then the sun comes back on. I mean, even the Hopi have said, we're getting ready for a 2 or 3 week period. It's going to be so hot from the sun that it'll burn the trees and the grass, just like the Book of Revelation says. So I think we're seeing in this cycle 24 some signs already that indicate what I said is correct. We are going to have some traumatic experiences with the sun. I mean, some serious killing lots of people events.
It makes you wonder, what did the Mayans know?
It does. I know that there are a lot of people who argue this point in the first line of Genesis in the Bible, but it talks about a previous civilization on the earth before the Garden of Eden. It says the earth had become waste and void, and there was a previous civilization, a previous earth. So was that one of the worlds that the Hopi talk about and the Mayans allude to in theirs? I mean, I don't know. I'm keeping my mind open because, you know, when humans get involved in recording history and stuff, there are gray areas and personal, accents or slants that go in the data. So in the end, you have to kind of put all the information together you can and hope you make the right conclusion and don't mislead anybody.
Let's bring Holly in here for a second, Stan. She's the expert on preparedness. Holly, if we get hit with an X flare, what do we do?
Are you talking about a direct hit?
Yeah. I mean, one that takes the grid down for a while, for example.
Well, if it takes the grid down, it will be probably a longer while than what most of us are prepared to deal with. We have been looking in at the EMP information and found out that it may not be quite as bad as what it is normally indicated. For example, generally people think that every single car is going to die unless it was pre-1970s. It's going to depend exactly on Earth, what part of Earth was turned toward the sun when the EMP hit.
That's right.
There will be some areas that are having more dramas and traumas than others. And, for instance, if a car, is on rubber, it's going to be somewhat, on rubber tires, it's going to be somewhat insulated from the EMP. And diesels, they don't have electric start engines, so they may still go, whereas, other cars might not.
Can an EMP affect a human, someone who, let's say, is not on a pacemaker, but somebody, does it cook them or anything like that?
It doesn't cook them, but it can cause injury, and especially if you are within 8 feet of concentrated metal, it's going to concentrate that pulse. And those people there that are closer to that, like heavy guy wire lines and other metal objects, that is going to concentrate the pulse. And that could, in fact, then make you more susceptible.
Cool. electric shock and whatever thing, something like that, I suppose.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Stan, with these possibilities and these very real possibilities, it could also happen to other countries, maybe not just us, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be a global thing no matter what happens. It'll affect the entire global structure.
Well, you know, the people that are less technology-oriented, the ones that are more third-developed, third-nation-developed, they are going to be faring way better than the rest of us.
They can already get by without electricity.
That's it, exactly. Yeah. That's it, exactly. And we've lost so much of our knowledge of how to do it, quote, by hand, and we're so dependent on our electronics that we are the ones that are going to suffer.
You know, they have talked about these possibilities of insulating the grid. Would that, Holly, do anything? Can they insulate the grid against an EMP flare?
Well, it has already been hardened. In fact, they were talking about doing a few of the major cities, but only a few, and just a couple of the outlying areas. And that was going to be something like $20 or $30 million. When you look at what government waste, that's pennies. And they really, really ought to be doing that. However, so much of our grid is dependent on other sections, so when it starts to topple, it all goes down rather easily.
Well, there's no doubt. We saw just what happened about a month ago in California and Arizona and in that region when a little tiny power surge hit a transmitter there, and it took power out to 3 million people.
That's it. And you know, those transformers, they're made, get this, in China. So, you know, it takes a year. These things are so complex, George. It takes a year to make a single transformer. Then you've got to transport it over here. Well, if nothing is working because everything is fried, how are they going to get it from there to here?
And I wonder what the inventory is for these power companies. I bet they don't have a lot of these in stock.
No, they don't, because they're vastly expensive.
So they might have a few, but they couldn't take care of 15 of them if they all went out, I don't think.
No, and you know, that brings up an interesting, just a side point here about China. Recently, we've been investigating, as you know, the nickel-iron Edison batteries for storing solar energy.
Yeah.
And the Chinese government has been buying up tens of thousands of these, buying up all of the stuff being made in China. So that it's finding it very hard to even get stuff out to the states, you know, these nickel iron batteries. And they're using it for the military and government departments. So they're already planning to use something that will be hardened, in essence, just by its simple construction, so they can have power in their control structure.
They are buying up all kinds of resources right now, aren't they?
They really are. I mean, steel, let's see, solar batteries.
Timber.
Yeah.
Rare earth minerals.
They're getting ready.
Ice caps are beginning to melt more and more and more. Some of them, 200, 300 years old, they're gone. What's happening there, Stan?
You know, that's unusual, because if you look at the North and South Pole ice caps, the North Pole cap is melting a lot quicker than the South Pole.
Okay.
I would hazard a guess and say majority of our industrialized populations in the Northern Hemisphere, therefore it might be, I hate to say it, contributing to the global warming because of human industry. But certainly since 1980-81, we've lost 54%, over half of the sea ice concentrations at the North Pole. Not that much at the South Pole, but definitely in the sea ice at the North Pole. Now, that's indicating a warming up there, and it's not rising sea level too much because that's already floating on the sea. But when you start to lose it off of Greenland or off of water or land masses, and that water runs into the ocean, then you'll start to see sea level rises. And since the South Pole is running behind this one, unless something with the sun heats it up quicker than we thought, we're going to be okay for, you know, a few years, 10, 15, 20 years, maybe, on that sea level rise. I wouldn't swear to it because there's too many variables, but yes, there's something happening there, and I'm studying it with my research on the containment gravitational fields of planets, it's a new theory, and I will be addressing some of that in an electronic book later, probably early next year now because I've been delayed. But and some of it, I'll have animations in Lynn Marzulli's Watchers 3 video, which I've already sent to their producer, showing what things open up the poles just briefly and that heat out when the planets, all of them, including Earth, go through a phase state change and their polar regions open up just like a little diaphragm, just tiny amounts, and heat from the core comes out and spreads out over the planet, and then it closes back. It's a periodic thing. It opens and closes.
Well, now, the map that you've shown us of North America, which is like Casey and some of the others, we're not talking about melting ice caps that would do that kind of water damage, are we? We're talking about something else.
Yeah, we're on the East Coast. The worst that you could get is 215 feet if we just melted the ice caps. But something else has to happen, and the core of our planet is expanding. We covered this on a show earlier with you guys, and I think in February or so this year, where I talked about how planets expand and how the continents didn't just drift apart; they were stretched apart as the Earth expanded to where its present diameter is, and that's over 25% of what its old diameter was at when all the continents were together in one landmass.
Right.
Now, I think that these changes occur rather suddenly; they're not gradual. Not like inches per year or something like that. We're talking about miles per year, hundreds of miles. And when a planet stretches, it leaves stretch marks at the polar regions in kind of a spiral shape. And I have found evidence of that, which are in photographs that NASA supplied and European Space Agency, of many of the major planets and moons and even asteroids exhibit these twisted spirals in their surfaces as they cooled during that stretching process. Now, on Earth, if our core starts to expand and put pressure on the layers right underneath the ocean bottoms in the Moho discontinuity, the Russians have proved it, and with deep well drilling, that there's fractured rock down there full of water, and it's very salty water. You know, it's got about 3.2 times the density of regular fresh water, and it's hot, and it's like a spherical, like the Earth is a ball that's like a hypodermic needle where somebody's pressing from the inside out, and it's going to squirt this hot water up through the cracks in the bottoms of the oceans, and probably in some land masses in this case. That would then add a lot more sea level height to our present seas. I think this is probably what happened in the Great Flood, which Noah and the Ark and everything occurred, because it says in the Hebrew that the rains only lasted 40 days, but for 100 and some odd days after that, the fountains of the deep, the pressurized hot water, it said, from underneath the ocean, spewed up.
They kept coming, yeah.
They kept coming, and that was enough to cover some pretty tall mountains. Now, that could happen, but I don't think that we're going to get that water that high. Certainly between 200 and 900 feet, maybe even 1,000 feet rise, yes. And that'll be reflected in the other maps I'm doing of that same, the United States and the Great Lakes and stuff. But now that's another possible cause, the second one. The third would be impact of some foreign body, into an ocean or landmass, creating a shock wave that breaks up some of the underground water and also produces like impact waves.
And that would be almost instant, wouldn't it?
That'd be pretty quick, yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't have time to think about that one. You don't worry about preparing for that one because you'll be gone if you're underneath it. The Bible is pretty specific about saying that, a huge, majority of the population of Earth will be killed during a number of these calamities that are coming at the end of this age. It's not the end of the world, just the end of this age. When you see the ancient cultures trying to warn us about something happening, I think this is what they're talking about. In the ways they knew best, they've tried to pass that information down to us in stone and carvings and whatever.
All right, Stan, when we come back, I want to ask you and Holly about La Palma, because that's hot right now, and that's the one that could create the problem on the eastern seaboard of the United States. Also, we'll get some UFO updates from you as well. So we shall be right back on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. Stan and Holly's website, they've got a couple of them, and they're all linked up at coasttocoastam.com.